flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. You can communicate with our dear friend City Limits on there. And then we move to the fan hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years with longtime Penguins observer, Penguins historian, Mr. Bob Grove. Grover, I haven't talked to you in a while. Welcome aboard. I started the show by talking about how that was really almost emotional for me watching late last night. It's a place where they won a cup. And the emotions were mixed between, wow, they've provided a lot to this town, and this is rock bottom. And that was symbolically it. They lost to the Sharks. Their effort was questionable. They've played 52 games and won 14 in regulation. They've doubled up the Sabres for worst goal differential in the East. They didn't mean to get to the bottom this quickly, Grover, but they're here. And my advice would be to embrace it from a fan perspective and from an organizational perspective, and try as best you can within the constraints of all these no movement clauses to tear it down to the studs. How do you feel?
Well, Joe, first of all, it's great to be on with you. It has been a while, and it's always good to talk hockey with you. I would not be in the position of, first of all, let me say, I agree with you about last night. I mean, outside the first 5 minutes, I mean, after two periods, they had just mailed it in. I mean, there's nothing else to say about it. It was atrocious. Second period was, the worst of the season for them. But I would not tear it down to the studs. Look, you've seen the teams that have done this. It's you trade every movable piece you can trade. And, you know, we're talking Anaheim, San Jose, the Hawks have done it. Let me tell you what. When you do that, you're not rebuilding in 3 or 4 years, Joe. It's going to take 7 or 8, probably. That's how long it takes. Now, we've seen teams turn it around quicker. I mean, you know, Dubas has talked about the Rangers in L.A. I mean, Washington's the most recent example, although they have some long-term injury help that's made that all possible for the Capitals. I wouldn't tear it all down, but I'd keep doing what Dubas is doing. And you just mentioned it at the top. One of the reasons why they can't tear it all down is they don't have control. A lot of these players, Dubas might come up with a great deal for somebody, and he'd want to do it, but he needs approval from the player. He doesn't get it. So, where they're at right now is just in a very, very difficult place. But I think he needs to keep doing what he's doing, which is stockpiling picks, taking a shot on some young guys, and trying to make a trade that can really brand his rebuilding of the Penguins. He hasn't done it yet. You know, maybe it's the McGroarty deal, maybe not. But if you look at, you know, the way the Caps have done it, they've made some great trades that have really put them where they're at right now. So it's a difficult spot, but tearing it down all the way, tearing it down, everything down, is just not going to happen.
if there were a generational player at stake, would you advise that? Because let's be honest, tearing it down to the studs is what got the Penguins all of their Stanley Cups.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, the Penguins have been, right. So the Penguins have had a lot of, as you know, Joe, a lot of fortune. And when they did this, you know, they tore it down right at the exact right time. So to get the players they got in the years you're talking about. But I mean, look, Buffalo's torn it down. Have they not? When's the last time they made the playoffs? Like there's no, look at the discontent in Chicago. They tore it all down. They got the guy they wanted in Bedard. And they're not showing any positive steps whatsoever. And I just mentioned Anaheim and San Jose as two examples of, look, yeah, loaded with young players, really good young players. But, you know, the next time they get into the playoffs, I don't know when it's going to be. It might actually be quicker for San Jose the way Celebrini plays. But, yeah, I just don't know. I wouldn't feel any differently about it. I mean, these are the cards that Dubas was dealt when he got here. He doesn't have a lot of control. He's got a million moves to make. He's got to try and restock the pipeline. And look, I mean, you got to give it to him. I mean, the Penguins, they've got 28 picks in the next three drafts, Joe. You know, so they're starting. The process is already a couple of years underway, and they just got to stay the course.
Yeah, I guess we could also quibble about what it means to tear it down to the studs, because certainly there are teams in the NHL that have bounced back to at least be in playoff position when they've really sunk to the bottom of the league. I mean, I'm looking back at standings, even 2019-20. The Red Wings lost 50 games that year. The Senators were horrible. The Devils had again sunk to the bottom of the league. So teams do sink to the bottom and build it back up, but I guess we could, you know, does that mean completely tearing apart everything? I don't know. So let's talk about one important piece in my mind, and that's Raquel. And I don't think the Penguins have any business keeping him. You're not, right now, you're not in the business of keeping 31, 32-year-old wingers at the height of their marketability just because Sid may want to play with him or he's working out well with Sid. I think you're doing your franchise a disservice. I think he might get you the best return of anybody who's available for the Penguins.
Yeah, a lot of it goes back to, you know, what that conversation with Sid's been over the last couple of years. And, you know, I think it's clear that that conversation has been like, we're not shipping everybody out the door. And I mean, and he's obviously okay with that, having just signed an extension. So, you know, you got to field a team next season, and you're going to trade Raquel. The only thing they got going for them offensively, Joe, is the top line. That's it. I mean, you know, they've got no depth of production. They really haven't had a second line outside of the first 3 weeks of the season that could produce anything at even strength all season long. So I don't know. And look, the trade value you're talking about for Raquel, it doesn't go away if you hang on to him. Have a good offseason, I mean, he's going to have value next season as well.
Unless he gets injured or unless he's had injuries, right, just last year, and he's getting up there in age, so he's a depreciating asset. That would be my only argument there.
Yeah, I mean, who knows about the injury piece of it, but, I mean, I think his value would still be there. And, you know, if you're trying to bring these young guys in an environment where they can be at least competitive, and let's not forget, there's a value to that. I mean, what we saw last night was a team that just, like, you know, they're obviously mentally, they're having trouble dealing with where they're at, and it's their own fault. But, you know, they haven't been able to deal with it. Do you want your young players in your organization to be awash in losing, you know, 50 games a year for the next 3 years?
You're here anyway.
I don't know that. Well, let's put it this way. Let's go back a little over a month. You go from Thanksgiving to a few days after Christmas. The Penguins had put together a stretch of 15 games where they were one of the best teams. There were only a couple teams in the league who had more points. So, and they haven't made any huge roster moves since then. In fact, they've improved the roster because they got rid of one of their bigger problems in Jarry. So the team that they had for those 15 games, and again, I'm talking a few days after Christmas, that team had put together not just a good week or two, they put together a solid month. So there's something there. Like, you don't go on a stretch like that unless you're capable of being competitive, at least being competitive. Since then, now, and of course on this trip, it's all gone south. And, you know, that's the thing you have to add. You're learning about a lot of players along the way when things just go south and you have no compete. There's just no compete. There was no compete last night in the second period. None. So, you know, you're learning something about them, and you got to take that and you got to learn from it and help you make decisions going forward. But I don't think you want to put the young players in the organization who are soon going to be at the NHL level. And we're talking about not only McGroarty, but, you know, you would hope Ponomarev and Koivunen, you know, maybe Bros, but certainly Pickering will be back, Harrison Brunicki. Do you want their first 3 to 4 years in the NHL to be, yeah, we're going into the season, we got no shot, we've torn it down, we'll see you in 4 or 5 years? I don't think that's the way you want to go about it.
Well, it is the way I want to go about it, but we can definitely choose to disagree there. You know, like, that makes it sound like they have a choice. Yet here they are with their best efforts to remain competitive, 20 goals behind the Buffalo Sabres in goal differential in the East. They're one of the worst teams in hockey right now. So,
They're not a good hockey club, and we knew this going in. But they've shown spurts of competitiveness this season. But I mean, their inability to get through it, and in times like these, like with efforts like that coming off, you know, efforts in Anaheim and Seattle that weren't really much better. That's the thing that that Dubas has to make sure he understands is when he's talking about making draft picks and making trades for players and, you know, taking shots at guys like Tomasino and Glass and all that stuff. Look, that's fine. But for me, Joe, a lot of it isn't just what is the player's skill set that I'm acquiring or drafting. Okay. It's what is his character?
Yeah.
Like, what I want the guys who get pissed off. Right. And they don't quit. That's the guys I want. Like, I can live with them if maybe this guy's a half a step slow or whatever the case may be. That's what they need more of. They need a lot more of that. You know, and that's like when Larson, you know, cross-checks Sid. I don't care who you are on that bench. You should be looking for Larson the next shift, and you should go take a penalty. Just go take one. Put yourself shorthanded.
Well, we definitely agree on that. And it, yeah,
you know, and we know that, but I have not, there's a spark that's missing from this group, and it was missing from last year's group, an emotion. That's what I don't see enough of. You see it on occasion. You see it occasionally. It's like everything else with this team. Occasionally, they can beat the Kings on the road. They can beat the Oilers. I mean, they played great in those games. There's just no way to equate that group being able to do that and then being able to do what you saw last night. And that, to me, doesn't come down to how fast you can skate and what are your skill levels and what's your vision of the ice. Yeah, that's all involved. But what is the character of the players you're stocking the team with? That's what they need to concentrate on, as far as I'm concerned.
On that, we agree. We're talking to Bob Grove. He's on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline. But Grover, here's what I'm having trouble with in this conversation. You're the ultimate Penguins historian. Does history not teach us with this franchise as much as any in the history of sports that embracing, for lack of a better term, embracing the suck, being really, really bad, it has borne great things. Yeah. It got you Mario. You missed the playoffs.
Yeah,
it got you Jagr when you missed the playoffs that year, when nobody wanted to miss the playoffs. And not only, I'm not just talking about these, you know, generational lottery prizes. It also got you Fleury. It got you Malkin as the second pick. It did get you Sid. I mean, to me, Penguins history teaches me that if you're going to be bad, be really bad for a little while and then build back up. But you seem to be rejecting that notion.
No, that's the history of it, obviously. That's the history. But, you know, they didn't embrace the suck to get Jagr. I mean, they just basically, Jagr talked his way into Pittsburgh, is basically what happened in that draft, telling everybody else he wouldn't come over, right? And then he wanted to play with Mario, and he wanted to play with the Penguins. And you know, so, and that team, you know, so that's different. And yes, it's happened exactly like that to get Mario and Sid. And you mentioned, you know, the really bad, they get Flurry, and they had to make a deal to make sure that they got the number one pick in order to take them, et cetera, et cetera. Look, I'm not up enough, Joe, on the kids who are coming up. I know that, you know, when I think about Bedard and when I think about McDavid, I remember hearing about them years before. I'm not hearing about anybody who's coming up in the next year or two that fits that bill for me. Like, you're going to tear it all down to get who? And are they Lemieux or Crosby?
Are they Jordan Staal? Are they Malkin? Are they Flurry?
Flurry's a Hall of Famer. Yeah. I mean, Staal's a really good player, but he's in a different for me.
I want to be drafting in the top five as much as possible.
Well, they might get you there. Right?
I mean, in spite of themselves,
they might get you there the way they're going right now, and they might get you there without a problem. So, I mean, I just don't know that there's anybody out there in the next couple of years that you're willing to just sacrifice at all. And, you know, and let's remember, you know, when they did this with Mario, you know what happened that year. There was no draft lottery. And it was, you know, there was no draft lottery in the Auger year. So that adds a whole different layer to tanking. So it's like we're talking about the Hawks getting Bedard, but like I'm just trying to remember if I remember this right, Joe, but they weren't the worst team in the league the year before. They were second or third.
Right. They made the mistake of beating the Penguins late that season, remember?
Right. Okay, so, but my point is you can tear it all down because there's a generational player coming and the timing's going to be perfect and you can lose the lottery.
Sure.
I mean, the Penguins know all about that.
They had
the number one pick the year Ovechkin was available, right? And they lost it, and everybody was up in arms. And then, you know, so they end up with Malkin. And, I mean, that was a turning point for the Penguins, Joe, because if you remember how the ping pong balls were allowed in the Crosby draft,
yeah,
had the Penguins won the lottery the year Ovechkin was available, they wouldn't have had more ping. They would never have won the lottery for Crosby. It never would have happened. So it's just like fate. Just worked for them, right? It just absolutely worked for
yes.
them. So they didn't get Ovechkin, but oh, by the way, the next guy's a Hall of Famer. And then because you didn't get the number one pick, you got a couple of extra ping pong balls in 05, and you got Crosby. I mean, it's just incredible fate.
Yes. I mean, it's not just for me about the generational player, although that's the Penguins' history. It's about giving myself the best chance for the best players for a 2 or 3 year stretch
yeah.
at least, not just in the first round. Like, you know, they yeah. drafted Chris Letang in 2005, too. It's getting high picks in yeah. every round. I don't care about making, like, a run to be a fringe player. I don't want to live in Steelers territory right now.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to sink to yeah. the bottom for 2 or 3 years is just fine.
I hear you. And I think Dubas is in the same place, is he not? Like, he's not ready to kill himself to get a team over the finish line into the playoffs so they can get swept in the first round. That's not where he's living either. So, I mean, I totally get that. And this is the thing about, and I hear you about the other picks. It's not just I hear you. So this is the thing I'm saying about the work he's done to date on the pipeline of picks. They got 28 picks in the next 3 years. 14 of those are in the top three. So half of the picks they have right now are in the first, second, or third, and they've got 7 picks that are in the first or the second. And there's more of those kind of picks coming. He's going to be moving players out. He's going to be getting more picks here at the trade deadline or in the summer. So I think that's the thing they got to keep doing, that he's got to keep doing. And then you have to make sure you assemble the scouts to pick the right players, and we just talked a little bit about well, what I'd be looking for there. But yeah, so I think they're on the right track with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The higher, the better. Tell me this, Grover, as the greatest numbers person in the history of Penguins hockey, when's the last time the Penguins had this few points through this many games in a season?
Yeah, well, look, Joe, every measuring stick that you put this or last year's Penguins team up against, and you want to say, when's the last time they were this bad at whatever, okay? They all go back to the same year, which is Sid's rookie year, 05-06. You know, and then that year, they had 34 points after 52 games. 34. They've got 48. So that's how bad that Holy team bird was. Milk.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing, Joe, and here's the other thing that might surprise you.
Wait, what year was that, Grover?
05-06.
05-06, yeah.
Sid's rookie year.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that might surprise you. The second closest to this number that they're at right now, which is 48 points after 52 games, the cup year in 09. And Penguins fans will remember that, you know, they went into Toronto on a Saturday night. They got blown out. It was Therrien's last game. They were a hot mess. They were in big trouble. After 52 games that year, Joe, they had 53 points. It's very close to the number of points they have right now.
That's amazing.
That team, so what did that team need to do? They needed to fire Therrien. They brought in Bylsma, but then they got Gonchar back, who'd missed the whole season. Then they added Kunitz. They added Guerin. They added Adams. You know, they already had the goalie. They had Malkin producing at, you know, an incredible rate with Sid. You know, you had the whole thing. You had Staal. You had all that. So it's a completely different, you know, environment that it happened in. But that's the second closest to the total point total that you have today. You know, I mean, what happened in 09 still just blows my mind, to be honest with you. You bring in a coach in the middle, not in the middle of the season, you bring him in late in the season, and this happens. You go from cup finalist the year before to we have to fire our coach and we're terrible, and then all of a sudden the Penguins can't be beat once all those pieces got into place. That's a credit to Shiro as well, obviously.
Amazing. Grover, great stuff. Thank you for joining me. Let's do this again sooner this time.
Sounds good, Joe.
There he goes, Bob Grove.